It's got a death curse.
So it's bothering me like me. And then who will help you up in the sewer?
Just like having a wart removed.
What's the boogeyman?
As a matter of fact, it was.
You are back to the Horror 101 show. This is your host, Cash Wampum. Fresh off vacation, Nude and I went to Jamaica. Lots of joints to be had. And you are at episode 42. You know us, we're always focusing on films that are about 30 years old. Films we grew up with that we love, that we want to share with you. That's just our bag. You know, a lot of podcasts, they're only focusing on the newer shit, and that's fine, but it's not really our style. But recently, we've been getting some requests from our listeners. Hey, why don't we focus on something a little newer? And we're going to bow to that request this time. If you guys want it, we're going to give it to you. First title that came to mind that was pretty recent, like from last year, it's probably one of the top 10 of last year, but there's a love-hate relationship with it that I've noticed reading the reviews online, was Babadook. We watched it a few months ago, loved it, absolutely loved it. We got it, you know, we understood exactly what the filmmaker was going for. It hit all the right marks, and it was a fantastic film about the realities of trauma and the terror that it can strike in everyday life. It was brilliant, actually. But we're not doing the Babadook. We chose a film from 2012, and we chose this film for many reasons. One, it was fun. And second, it pays tribute to a lot of older titles that we usually focus on, so everybody wins. You wanted something newer? You got it. Tonight, the world-famous Brian Stewart, the lovely Nude, and I are paying our tribute to Joss Whedon's Cabin in the Woods. Okay, so tonight we're kind of bending to the listener's will, because like I said, we got requests from some of our listeners that we cover something a little more modern. Which one are we doing?
Cabin in the Woods.
Now, it's interesting that the cult sensation will not be here this evening because he's not feeling very well. The three of us went to see this at the show. I remember that vividly, as if it was yesterday, going to see this movie. And I didn't really know what to think, because it seemed like a group of youths going to, you know, what the title suggests, a cabin in the woods, and, you know, fit hits the sham. But that's just a small part of the film.
It seems quite typical by the trailer. You've seen this story before, mm-hmm. time and again, right? It's an old tale. But at the same time, I was always intrigued because the stupid trailers kept talking about, oh, you won't believe the twists. And I'm looking at this trailer saying, twists? But then I saw Joss Whedon's name attached, and I was even more intrigued because I'm like, whoa, wait a minute, what's he doing? Because for him to make a purely horror film doesn't seem like him either, because everything he's ever done has been more tongue-in-cheek. He knows how to play with conventions, and if you've watched Buffy the Vampire Slayer, he knows what happens in typical horror films, and he knows how to play against type. So he knows that this is what people are going to expect, and I'm going to take it the other way.
I was never a big Lost head, and anybody who was into Lost when it was out was typically a huge Joss Whedon fan. Brian Stewart, you'd probably know a lot more. Give us more of this Joss Whedon guy.
Well, Joss Whedon was actually the guy who gave us Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Right.
Both the movie, and then he brought it back as the TV series, which was far more successful. Then he ended up doing Angel for a run of four or five seasons.
Right.
After Angel ended, he didn't get his way with Buffy. He had two more seasons, I think, planned, or at least one more after the final season. I think Buffy ended in season seven, but there was an eighth season planned, and it got rushed, and the studio kind of axed production halfway through season seven. So he had to rush an ending onto his show, and he kind of had to do a comic book series to wrap things up the way he wanted. But after that was canned, and then Angel was planned, and then Dollhouse only got one season, and Firefly got axed, he's pretty well given up television altogether. So now we have him directing movies. He's done the Avengers film for us, and he's doing the second Avengers film, The Age of Ultron. So when I saw his name attached, I was even more interested, and you know, there was a bit of a buzz growing. And what was odd is that some of my friends who had seen the movie refused to tell me what they wouldn't talk about the ending. Oh no, you just got to see it. Go see it first, then we'll talk. And that's when you know it's good, when nobody wants to spoil it.
It's gonna be a long weekend if everyone's that puckered up. So you want to come over Monday night? I'm gonna pick up some power drills, liberate my cabinets. Are you even listening to me?
It's clear from the start, this is not your regular horror film. Mr. Whedon opens the movie in a very foreign, urban environment with useless banter from two very funny actors, Richard Jenkins and Bradley Whitford. This was done as a joke to the audience, making them think they accidentally walked into the wrong theater.
And I think this also fits in with our, the last, you know, whatever, however 40 plus movies we've podcasted and reviewed. Even though it's a newer horror film, it's actually giving nods to older films.
Right.
So it kind of ties in what we're here for, why we have this this podcast and program going, is basically to introduce people to things they haven't really seen. But like I said, this is a modern twist, but really giving nods to, like you said, Brian, the formula. So it kind of puts everything together, old and the new.
It's also a kind of a neat way of rewarding our fans doing this show now after they've watched or listened to 41 podcasts. This will be our 42nd now.
Yes.
And now it's kind of like after you've, you know, hopefully watched all the movies we've recommended and learned something, now you're ready to really appreciate what you're going to see in this. It's like, here it is. And we're kind of cheating in a way. I know fans have been asking for more recent films, but it's our way of using a recent film to talk about all those films in the past that we still love. So we're kind of cheating here.
But I think they're not going to be disappointed. I think it's going to be a good show.
The first thing you see in the film are the staff of whatever this charade is.
They almost, they work to kind of endear them to us too, because Bradley Whitford has his own little backstory, his own little personal drama going on with him and his wife childproofing the house. The chemistry between Jenkins and Bradley Whitford was perfect. I mean, you don't know what to make of them early on, and I'm not really sure who you're supposed to be rooting for in this movie.
We're quickly introduced to five likable, modest, intelligent, good-looking post-secondary friends who are packing up a mobile home for a weekend at a cabin in the woods. If that sounds familiar, well, it should. And that's the point, which we'll get to later.
I hope this is the right road. It doesn't even show up on the GPS. It is unworthy of global positioning.
That's the whole point. Get off the grid, right? No cell phone reception, no traffic cameras. Go someplace for one goddamn weekend when I can't globally position my ass. This is the whole issue.
Is society crumbling, Marty?
No, society is binding, right? It's filling in the cracks with concrete. Everything's filed or recorded, blogged, right? Chips in our kids' heads so they won't get lost. Society needs to crumble. We're all just too chicken shit to let it.
Five, Mr. Rance.
You will come to see things my way.
Think of all the horror films where people are on their way to certain death. We know this as the audience because we bought the ticket. We're expecting the carnage, but the characters don't. And how many times do they run into that person who warns them not to proceed? They go anyway. Much to their detriment, they ignore the harbinger of doom.
You may think me an eccentric old cleric and not much credit to my cloth, but I can be serious. And when I tell you not to go to Carlsbad, I want you to take note.
Remember Crazy Ralph from Friday the 13th?
The real prophet of doom, ain't he? You're going to care blood, ain't you? never come back again.
Oh, shut up, Ralph.
It's got a death curse.
How about Just Before Dawn, 1981?
It ain't just poison ivy I'm talking about, son. At least tell me where you're going, so that when you don't come back, I'll know how to fill out the report.
It's an element that's been used since the dawn of horror. Here's Dracula, 1931.
Castle Dracula?
Yes, that's where I'm going.
To the castle?
Yes.
No. You mustn't go there.
And that's exactly what our young friends run into when they stop for gas and get directions.
Storm Road. Takes you up the hill there. Dead ends at the old Buckner place.
My cousin bought a house up there. You go through like a mountain tunnel, there's a lake. Would that be the...
Buckner place. Always someone looking to sell that plot. I think we got enough gas.
You got enough to get you there. Getting back. That's your concern.
Now here's the difference between this guy and the other people in history who've been warning of the dangers ahead. This guy's a plant. He's working for a group that's monitoring these kids' every move, steering them to the place where they are going to inevitably have to die, the cabin in the woods. It's all controlled, and at this point, you're wondering, what the fuck is going on?
Mordecai, baby, what's happening? How's the weather up top?
The lambs have passed through the gate. They are come to the killing floor.
Well, you're doing a great job out there.
Their blind eyes see nothing of the horrors to come. Their ears are stopped.
They are the gods' fools. Cleanse the world of their ignorance and sin. Bathe them in the crimson of...
I'm still on speakerphone, aren't I?
Oh my God, Mordecai!
I can't believe it. It did it again.
Morty? What happened to that?
So first they work to make them human and to make them likable, and then they give them this despicable job. You know, so it takes you in a lot of weird directions.
And I think Joss Whedon wanted that right from the start, that this is all a play.
Yeah.
This is all being manipulated. You're going to know it right from the start. You're going to watch it come together and recognize how they put the pieces together to make it seem like the scenario to all these horror films that you grew up watching, you know? Yeah. It was basically an amalgamation of everything that is kind of cliche about horror, but done in a lovingly, carefully planned kind of way.
In a way kind of explains the necessity for cliché. That they're not really clichés. That there's a reason that cultures tend to stick to these tried and true horror stories with a set formula. And so it really takes the genre and gives us something kind of meta, right? It kind of expands it. And it says, okay, it's not just, you know, run of the mill. These aren't just studio films trying to make a buck off a cheap formula. That there's a reason for all this.
What these five people don't know is that this cabin in the woods is really situated on top of an elaborate control center where everything is being monitored and manipulated. Jules's hair dye is chemically altered to make her slowly turn into this sex pot bimbo. You have sex in a horror movie, you're gonna die. Isn't that the rule? They pump pheromones into the environment to turn Kurt into this dumb jock. They all need to fulfill a certain archetype and be dispatched by some evil that they bring upon themselves. And there is a reason for all this. It's a system.
Well, we just get them in the cellar. They take it from there.
No, they have to make the choice of their own free will. Otherwise, the system doesn't work. It's like the Harbinger. It's this creepy old fuck. Practically wears a sign, you will die. Why do we put him there? The system. They have to choose to ignore him, and they have to choose what happens in the cellar. Yeah, we rig the game as much as we need to, but in the end, they don't transgress.
They can't be punished.
What the hell was that? It's the cellar door.
The wind must have blown it open.
That makes what kind of sense?
What do you think's down there?
The cellar door popping open behind them like that?
Yeah.
That's so Evil Dead, I can't even begin to describe it. That is like a page out of Evil Dead. It's not even a reference. It's like, this is precisely what they did.
I wonder if Sam Raimi's had anything to say about this movie.
I'm sure at the end of the day, he was probably quite flattered that his movie was the main theme that this film, you know, emulated from.
In a lot of ways, this is the movie we deserve more so than the remake. I don't care for remakes, but taking something that we love and doing an homage or adapting it in a new way, that'll take.
If horror movies have taught us anything, it's that if a cellar door opens by itself, do not go down there. And if you do, for Christ's sakes, don't fucking touch anything.
Maybe we should go back upstairs. I dare you all to go upstairs.
The cellar is filled with artifacts ranging from wedding dresses to dolls to jewelry, seashells, and not to mention, puzzle boxes. Each one different, each one representing an evil that is destined to be triggered, and the people up top, they're betting on which one will be unleashed. You should see the list of things they have on the betting board.
You got all the classics. You got werewolf, alien,
sugar beasts, plum fairy,
wraiths, zombies, reptilius, clowns, witches, sexy witches, demons,
dismemberment goblins,
hell lords. So that must be your pinhead, right?
Oh, the scarecrow folk.
Angry molesting tree.
Yeah. Angry molesting tree. There's another evil dead. Deadites.
Deadites. Yeah.
Oh my God. Deadites.
The bride.
Dolls. Just dolls.
The bride. Mummy. Kevin.
The reanimated.
Yeah, as in reanimator. Jack unicorn. Boy.
Dolls.
What the fuck is the Huron? Indian.
Yeah.
Right?
Sasquatch, Wendigo, Yeti.
Dolls.
The Doctors. Dragon Bat. We do see that later on.
Giant
too,
twins.
And Zombie Redneck Torture Family. Yay.
Zombie Redneck Torture Family. That's the Buckners,
that's
right?
The Buckners.
That's the ones that they picked.
Okay. I'm drawing a line in the fucking sand here. Do not read the Latin.
Read it. What the fuck? Read it out.
Dolor.
No.
Stop being a fucking baby.
Kurt.
It's a diary.
It doesn't even mean anything.
Dana.
Dolor super vivo caro. Dolor sublimus caro. Dolor igneo animus.
You ignore the harbinger of doom, you investigate a strange occurrence, and now you just read the incantation that has unleashed a family of undead pain-worshipping killers upon you. Very good. Bravo! You've just sprung the trap and awakened the means of your own demise!
We have a winner! It's the Buckners, ladies and gentlemen! The Buckners pull the W!
All right, that means that congratulations go to maintenance! Who share the pot with Ronald the intern.
That's not fair. I had zombies too.
Yes, you did. Yes, you had zombies. But this is Zombie Redneck Torture Family, see? They're entirely separate species. It's like the difference between an elephant and an elephant seal. But there's always next year.
You seriously believe nothing weird is going on?
Conspiracy?
The way everybody's acting. Why is Jules suddenly a celebutard? And since when does Kurt pull this alpha male bullshit? I mean, he's a sociology major. He's on full academic scholarship, and now he's calling his friend an egghead?
Kurt's just drunk.
I've seen Kurt drunk. Jules, too.
Well, then maybe it's something else.
You're not seeing what you don't want to see. We are not who we are.
What I really like, too, is that in a lot of ways, yes, it's an homage, but at the same time, there's a little bit of backhandedness there about how contrived the form is. Because, you know, as Marty points out, he's like, what's with all this going on here? You know, he's a sociology major. Like, he's calling his buddy Egghead, and, you know, she's the dumb blonde. They all have to be shoehorned into those roles. They think they're not even real people, in a way.
Yeah, well, it starts out, the film, they're all academics.
Right.
They're all educated, well-rounded individuals. They don't fit these persona at all. They have to manufacture the elements.
Right.
They have to pump in the gas to make them stupid, pump in the pheromones to make them horny.
Yeah, but yeah, it's kind of like, I think they're saying, showing us the good and the bad and the kind of horror elements, right? That, yes, the characters are often unbelievable in horror films. They don't make the logical decisions. But at the same time, it does answer some questions like, why would somebody do that? Well, it's off. You know, I think it takes all those conventions that we've come to expect from horror films, and they use it as the rules of the game, and they give us all these wonderful explanations. They said, I mean, it's a lot of fun. Like I say, the fans who have been with us for 42 episodes, right? I think they're really going to dig this.
And they're really going to dig when the killing starts.
The pacing of this movie is great because from the moment they figure out that there's something wrong going on, there's no pause moments. The deaths are coming in good frequent intervals. Like, they don't have an initial death and then they just kind of pad and wait a while. People die like relatively quickly in this movie. It all starts to really unravel fast.
Well, you know, the payoff for me is earlier in the film when the fit hits the shan, when they make their choice in the cellar as to what evil's going to come and deal with them. The deaths of the key characters while they're still in the woods, not knowing what's going on, was graphic. I mean, it was good. It wasn't over the top.
The whole world is a homicide victim, Father.
What do your notes say, Pants?
Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Evil Dead, this movie, and most of them have in common that there's always five. And there's always roles, like titles, you know, the promiscuous one, the jock, the stoner, the brainiac, yeah. And of course the virgin. It's very consistent that way.
And now we're down to two, the fool and the virgin. Against all odds, they survive the Buckners long enough to stumble onto the facility that lies beneath. An elevator amongst an infernal cache of lethal horror evils.
In the cellar? All of that shit we were playing with. They made us choose. They made us choose how we die.
Where the fuck did they get these things?
They said they were from the thing below, right? From the old world.
They say, here, take these monstrosities.
Remnants of the old world.
Everything, every kind of horrific, evil, supernatural villain you could possibly have, from giant spiders and snakes to killer clowns to a fucking unicorn, man.
We saw them go down the access drop. They have to be in one of these. Internal security could...
I don't care if it's not protocol. Are you fucking high?
It's the fool.
Do not touch the girl. If he outlives her, this whole thing goes to hell. Take him out first.
Cleanup says the prep team missed one of the kid's stashes.
Whatever he's been smoking's been immunizing him to all our shit.
How does that help us right now? What?
No, if you have a confirmed kill, take her out too.
There.
3606. Gotcha. Bring him down.
Our friends, this is where we get our horrorgasm. As the security team tries to take out our survivors, they find a big red purge button. With one push, every chamber of terror is unleashed in the facility. You want mayhem? You've got it.
When you and I saw this in theaters, we were like elbowing each other, like, look over here, look over here. Like,
I remember that, because I was sitting in between you and Nude when we watched that, and there was, when everything's running amok, and the security center's looking at the screen, there's like 12 different screens with something.
I was elbowing you and he was elbowing both of us.
Something different on each screen, and Brian's like, oh look, somebody's over, look what's happening over the corner. I'm like, Brian, look what's going on over there in that corner right there. We're trying to show each other different screens, and then the scene was over. I'm like, fuck, where's the pause and rewind button?
So, fair warning to anyone who hasn't seen this movie yet, if you're about to watch it, keep the remote handy, because you're going to want to pause it at certain points, because there is no way watching this in real time that you will see everything. Can't be done.
Sector 12 down, Sector 8 down, Sector 3 down. Jesus Christ!
Why aren't the defenses working?
Where's the fucking gas?
Something chewed through the connections from the utility shaft.
Something went,
something scared!
Look at all the movies that they reference, like from Hellraiser to Alien to all the old classics, but the main theme was Evil Dead. Like, yes. They referenced Evil Dead at least 5 or 6 times. The other plot points was referenced once, maybe twice. You had the Cenobite, instead of a box, he had a sphere, right from Hellraiser. You had the two little girls in the cell, right from The Shining. You had the killer clown, which you immediately go to Stephen King's It, but to be honest, there's been 1,000 killer clown movies. Take your pick. Yeah. Giant snakes, giant spiders, giant anything.
Aliens.
Was the 50s.
They had Starship Troopers in there. That weird critter in the cell looked just like one of those Starship
like
Troopers.
Like the bug. And that's Helen's favorite movie.
No, it's not.
There was a giant spider as the cubes were moving back.
There was a giant spider there. Yep.
And like a lot of like when Jules was dancing, it was, you know, at night in front of the fireplace, reminiscent of
Night of the Demons.
Night of the Demons. Linnea Quigley.
Her little dance number in front of the... Yeah, I'm like, the only thing you need there is another girl handing the girl or their boyfriend a beer, trying to cool him down watching the show, right?
The kill, Scalder's kill, Holden, was very Kevin Bacon from Friday the 13th.
Yeah, plunged through the throat from behind.
So many great shots on this movie. Actually, Helen, you pointed out The Shining, and I wasn't even thinking that. In the elevator room, all the blood on the walls, and I'm like, absolutely.
Yeah, and another one, they're coming down the elevator, and all these monsters, for lack of a better word, are behind glass, which is reminiscent of 13 Ghosts.
Yeah, because in 13 Ghosts, all the evils, all the ghosts they had collected were in these cells that were locked in with spells that were written on the glass cubes to keep them in.
Of course, we all spotted that opening low camera shot of the cabin. It's pure Evil Dead, right?
Yeah.
Like I said, the only thing that was missing when they rolled up on the cabin was the swing on the chain banging up against the window or the wall.
You shouldn't be here. This should have gone differently. Ended more quickly. I can only imagine your pain and confusion, but know this. What's happening to you is part of something bigger, something older than anything known.
So let's score this. Nude!
Definite 8. I think this is a perfect horror movie fan movie. Guess it just the references, and especially like you put it perfectly. It's great because you're putting the pieces, or like it's like a word search type of puzzle where you're trying to say, oh, I found this, oh, look at this, and you have to watch it a couple times, even maybe 3 times, in order to find the references. But no, absolutely great movie, especially if you're a horror fan like we are.
You seeing this?
Perfect record, huh?
The Japan crew should have had this in the bag. They fucked us. How hard is it to kill 9-year-olds?
0 fatality. Total wash.
Brian Stewart.
It's going to be a 9 for me. You know, it's the fun factor. Not necessarily perfect. I don't know how well it's going to hold up to repeat viewings. I've seen it, 3 times now? And it's been fun every single time. But knowing all the gimmicks, and once you find all the little hidden treasures in the movie, I wonder if it's still going to hold that same level of enjoyment once you've looked in all the corners of the screen and seen everything. But it still has a fun story. It still it plays with elements of archetype and, you know, expectation in the genre. And I like that sort of thing, that kind of meta involvement where you can twist our expectations around. And Joss Whedon's really good for that. Like I say, when was the last time, we say this time and time again on the show, what was the last time you saw a modern horror film that was explicitly meant just to be fun? You know, not to be dour, gloomy, sadistic, just fun. And, you know, this is a rare treat, really.
This isn't right. We should split up. We can cover more ground that way.
Yeah. Yeah, good idea.
Really?
I'd give it an 8.5. Like I said, it's a love letter to the horror genre. If you watch this film and you don't go, oh, I know what that is at least 10 times, you're not a horror fan. You need more horror 101. That's what I'm suggesting. You know, like, things should be popping out at you that should say, oh, like, that's definitely Evil Dead. That's definitely Hellraiser. That's definitely this monster movie. And there's the twins from The Shining. And there's something from The Fly kind of deal. And there's the bag over the head from Black Christmas. If you're not constantly doing that, particularly at the end of the film, you're not a true horror fan and you need more Horror 101.
You know, I would say, you know, to the listeners, if they spot something in this movie that we didn't mention in the show, send us a message. Go to the website or go to Facebook, post the timestamp, and let us know what you saw, because I'm sure we missed a lot.
Oh, I'm sure.
This we offer in humility and fear for the blessed peace of your eternal slumber, as it ever was.
As it ever was.
And there you have it, The Cabin in the Woods, directed by Drew Goddard, starring Kristen Connolly, Chris Hemsworth, Amy Acker, Richard Jenkins, and Bradley Whitford. If you're a bit disoriented after this show, we completely understand. There's a lot to chew on here. Why is all of this happening to these people? What's the reason for this ritual of death? All of this will be explained in the movie by a special cameo appearance at the end of the film. There are hundreds of little nods throughout the movie to keep you entertained. The Cabin in the Woods is a huge grab bag of violence and comedy stitched together with all the tropes of the modern horror film. It really is an excellent flick, and we hope you check it out. We appreciate your patience waiting for this episode. With all humility, I admit that I struggled continuously while putting this podcast together. This film is so unorthodox, I can honestly say it was my most challenging edit yet. But your constant messages and emails asking where the fuck we'd gone to got my ass in gear. We finally got her finished. We hope it was worth the wait. And with that being said, the summer months are upon us. Newt and I have a lot of things going on up here in Windsor, Ontario, so the gap between shows may continue to be a little wider during the season, but you know we'll be back. I have an interesting idea for the next show, and if it goes the way I'm thinking, it will be a fantastic podcast. Keep visiting us on Facebook for updates, and we'll talk to you soon. And for the world-famous Brian Stewart and the lovely Nude, this is Cash Wampum saying thanks for listening and reminding you that there's a horror movie out there that's just going to scare the hell out of you. And we're going to continue to help you find it right here at Horror 101, Educating Your Fears.